This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And this is show 261. It is our free agency preview. And we've got a little other stuff to talk about, as weird stuff is happening throughout the world right now, especially in the world of sports. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today sports media group, NFL wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, welcome to the show. We're going to talk free agency, but it's a weird time right now as we are dealing with the social part of the coronavirus, COVID-19. Lots of information out there. And before we get started, that's kind of the topic we've got to get out of the way with, is the fact that right now, we're recording on a Tuesday night. Tuesday was a day full of news of cancellations and changes and everything else. In the NFL, we're in the offseason, so it doesn't appear to affect the offseason. And if it is, it's going to be minimally. But what has been your reaction, Seth, to all the news with Major League Baseball canceling spring training, pushing its opening day, NBA canceling or postponing, suspending the season, the NCAA tournament canceling, the XFL shutting down, the IFL, the Arena League, the Indoor Football League is pushing things back right now. This is a weird time. We're going sportsless for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's just different. I mean, it's not something we've seen, you know, in our lifetime, at least for a, you know, communicable disease, working in healthcare. You know, we're a little more updated and inundated with information from the medical community and what's going on. And so it's just interesting to kind of, you know, see the general public and then the healthcare community, like the differences in opinions and thoughts and reactions and things of that. I mean, the reaction from, you know, the people within my clinic and things like that today, when, you know, the NCAA tournament was canceled, for instance, they were like, wow, that's, you know, it's shocking and, you know, surprising. Not something really anybody expected at this point. So that, you know, that should tell you something. But at the same time, when it's this, you know, publicized and popular, you know, it, from a PR standpoint, the easiest thing to do is take it out of the hands of the community and put it in the hands of, you know, the owners and say like, hey, this is our deal. This is what we're doing and this is how we're going to do it. And that way we don't have to, you know, deal with any fallout or potential repercussions or put anybody in a danger spot that they don't need to be in.
And the truth of the matter is that the sickness, the virus itself isn't terribly dangerous to most people. The numbers that are out there show that it is flu-like, but it is more, I mean, it does have a fatality rate that's a bit high, much higher than the flu. And I know there's a group of people that think this is really a bunch of hubbub over nothing, especially with the relatively small numbers of the cases here in the United States. Personally, as much as I hate that it's disrupting our life so much, it makes sense to be on this side of caution, because while if I were to catch it, it probably wouldn't do much for me other than put me under the weather a few days. There are plenty of people, whether it be the elderly, the young, those who have a compromised immune system, but there are plenty of people for whom this is a real concern. And by taking away just things as simple as, okay, so for the next 2 weeks, now we don't know how long this is going on, but say for the next 2 weeks, we are getting rid of all the possibilities of thousands of people getting together. You're simply reducing the possibility of spreading, which will ideally give nature and the healthcare system time to adjust so that all it is, that it doesn't become anything crazy. It feels crazy right now, but it's not crazy. It's just limiting that so it doesn't just take over society. It feels like it right now. Now, the question is, in terms of what's happening in the NFL has said it is not delaying the beginning of its league year. They did cancel their March annual meeting that they were going to have with the owners. There are teams who have proactively brought back all their scouts and staff from traveling. Some have shut down facilities. Other than that, the league is kind of in a wait and see, in part because right now you don't have aside from employees, there isn't mass grouping. Now, in terms of draft preparation, there are many schools who have shut down their pro days. And some agents are telling their clients or draft prospects not to do private workouts and things like this. This is all a full effect some. Do you think the league needs to do more than they have? Should free agency in the new league year be delayed? Should be looking ahead to the draft and canceling it now, or looking to change the fan experience, or is it just too early to do that yet?
Yeah, I think it's too early. I mean, obviously you want to see a little more of what's going on within the communities and things of that nature. It's relatively low numbers at this juncture in Arizona specifically, and then obviously in the United States it's lower than most countries at this time. And I mean, this is March 12th when we're talking, so we can get new updates anytime now. But from that perspective, it is kind of it comes down to the idea of herd immunity and social distancing is the favorite word that they're using right now. But like, the idea is to stay out of mass groups where not the that it's not the danger to the person, but it could be a danger to those that they come in contact with later. So for instance, I have a birthday with my 80 soon to be 88 year old grandfather-in-law, so if I go to the NFL draft and then go to his birthday, that's probably not the best thing in the world. Things like that, and that makes a lot of sense from an ideological standpoint. And I have a child who has some herd immunity issues that we deal with here, and so all the other kids have to sacrifice when it comes to flu vaccines and things like that because he can't. So we're well versed in this situation outside of just my medical background, but in living it. So and I know your wife's the same way. We have more of an inside knowledge on that side of things, but and then having to live it too and make decisions in that sense, from just the overall ideal, it just makes a lot of sense.
Right. If you take away the scenarios in which we can't control individually, doing the things what we can in the scenarios and the situations which we do control, this should blow over. And it will feel like an overreaction, but if it doesn't get worse, I think it will have been the right reaction. When it comes to the beginning of the league year, I don't think they need to push it back. We'll see what happens because, especially the very first part of free agency, it is almost all remote. There are agreements made contracts can be signed. You can do things remotely. The physicals might get tricky, but I'm sure there's ways to do that without requiring a lot of travel. It would cost teams more, but maybe they could do private flights and things of that nature. It's just there aren't many things you can do and still have the league begin. And the funny thing is that this is still in the middle of... We're not recording on a Tuesday night. It's a Thursday night because we didn't want to record next Tuesday when free agency holiday begins. So that was all that. But the collective bargaining agreement, the CBA proposal, still hasn't been approved or denied. The voting goes through the end of this week. And so not only do we have the health issue, we also have labor uncertainty, not necessarily for 2020, but looking ahead to 2021. If it's approved, then we're going to see new things taking over, new proposals, new money, new more increased salary cap, and things of that nature. So it's a lot to do, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with free agency. But you know, if anything, right now, if within the next week, I think the biggest thing that might change with the NFL would be the canceling of the fan events for the draft, to where the draft then becomes a non-attended event. Maybe they even take away the whole meeting part. The truth is, and I saw this proposed by a reporter on Twitter, the whole thing could be done digitally. And if you wanted to have the coverage part of it, you just have individual reporters or cameramen from local areas covering individual players at the players they're at. Obviously, you wouldn't have the hubbub and you wouldn't have the boats going across the water for the draft there in Vegas. But, you know, that's that. And honestly, I don't want this to become bigger than it is, because we're already looking at a weird time when there's no toilet paper and hand sanitizer anywhere at any stores here locally. But now we're facing the next foreseeable future without sports, some of us without church, and we're even looking at perhaps without school for a time as well. And it's weird. And you know, I would love to focus on just the football part, because I don't like worrying about social or political things or health things. Those things that we take for granted, I want to continue to take for granted, because I want health to be here in our great country, just kind of the given that we all live in a place where we don't have to just worry about being sick when we go out in public or putting people at death risk more than just the normal. And I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an odd time. That's what, you know, kind of looking at it, it's just there's a weird sense, and it's clear that there's a lot of you know, resentment and things of that nature, and it's like this should be the type of thing that brings people together more than anything else, in the sense of like, hey, we all have a common goal here. Like, no matter where we stand on anything, we all want the earth to continue, right? Like, right.
I don't want this to become a movie that we see. Those are fun to see because they're not real. Let's not make
right.
them reality.
And so, you know, that's the odd part of it, is that it's become divisive and, you know, all that silly stuff. And it's like, hey, let's just win one for mankind at this point. Like, so we can get back to arguing about football and, you know, draft picks and things of that nature, like petty stuff and stuff, instead of stuff that actually kind of matters.
Right. Let's wrap that up and let's begin with actually the talk of what this show was meant to be about, and that's about free agency. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we will begin our talk about free agency. We're going to talk about, first, the Cardinals free agents and the guys that we want the Cardinals to bring back, what we think they should do with them. We're going to talk about the possible moves that they can make to free up some salary. and then talk offensive players and defensive players. But up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, talking about the Cardinals' own free agents and their future. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We are now talking free agency and the Arizona Cardinals. We're talking football stuff. We're talking about stuff that's fun that it ultimately doesn't really matter for most of us other than our pride and in what we love. But the Arizona Cardinals want to improve, and they do have a number of their own free agents that they have not taken care of yet. Thus far, we know Larry Fitzgerald has re-signed. We know that DJ Humphries has re-signed. And after that, there was a lot of up in the air. So let's go through some of these players. Who of the free agents that the Cardinals have, and they have a number of them, some of them unrestricted, a couple, I think there's three restricted, and several exclusive rights. We're just going to assume that the exclusive rights players are going to be back because they're minimum salary players, and they don't really count anything against the salary cap yet. If you were the Cardinals, who would be your priority to bring back as of right now?
You know, it's tough because when you look at the, you know, restricted free agents and things of that nature, it's hard to decipher who kind of matters and who doesn't. You know, we've talked quite a bit about the biggest name, Kenyon Drake. And, you know, you and I have talked about this. This has been a theme of, you know, the Draft Breakdown podcast. You've basically adopted it into your belief system that it's not that running backs don't matter. They actually matter quite a bit. What it is that you never pay running backs or you never hang on to running backs because it just ends up costing too much down the road. And they're in such a position that they take so much of a beating that their contract always seems to be outweighed by the fact that if you lose a, you know, God forbid, a Christian McCaffrey, if you're the Panthers, your team's going to be completely awful. And so you can say the same thing about a quarterback, and I get that, but, you know, you look at the number of hits a quarterback takes. I mean, Kyler Murray was sacked, what, 58 times this season? And that wasn't even number one in the NFL. And McCaffrey had nearly what 400 touches this season,
so and that's only on a hand that he scored some touchdowns, so he didn't get hit on every single play, but he got hit on almost every single time he touched the ball.
Right. So that's the thing, is like you look at Drake and you and I have always advocated for players getting their money. Like, go get your money. Go make as much money as you can in the short amount of time that you have access in this league, especially running backs. So you and I don't begrudge David Johnson for holding out and getting paid. That's on the Cardinals for being naive enough to pay him. And so in the same way, we don't begrudge Kenyon Drake. I don't know if I'd even be comfortable at the $5 million a year that's been bandied about at this point, you know, what was it, 315 or 316 and a half or whatever, that's been kind of bandied about that the Cardinals may be offering Drake. Like, still a running back, man. Like, you could get one of those in the second or third round that can produce at the same rate. And so, you know, I get that Cliff wants Drake back. Sounds like Steve would like Drake back at the right price. Obviously, Kyler and the guys would love to have him back, but that's a tough sell for me. I think my biggest one right now is probably either Justin Murray or Rodney Gunter. I think you got to – I mean, Murray's a, you know, restricted free agent, so all they have to do is put a tender on him and then hope nobody matches it. But
so here's the thing with Murray. He's not even restricted. He's exclusive rights. He's going to be
exclusive
back.
Rights. Yeah. So and then Gunter's interesting because, you know, I think we talked about this last year, but maybe you and I just talked about it off the air. I don't remember. But we'll just, you know, rehash it real quick. Gunter, from a guy I trust, Gunter thought he was going to get paid. He thought he was going to be able to go out and not like, you know, not like cash in like big time, but he thought he was going to get like a Darius Filon type contract in free agency, maybe even more. He was hoping for around, between 3 and 15 and 3 and 20, and came back and got basically nothing. Whether or not it's true, he ended up taking less than the initial offer from the Cardinals, because, you know, that's one of the big things with Keim, right, is that he gives you an offer and then it's good, and then when you leave, it's not available anymore. So, you know, again, take that for what you will. And so now he's a free agent again. He had a nice season, but it's not like he put up 7-8 sacks where he can be like, hey, somebody pay me $5-6 million. So, I mean, could you potentially get him for 2 years, you know, $7 million at this point? If you can, I think you got to do that. Even like 3 years, $10 million with like 5.5 or 6 guaranteed, I think is a slam dunk for the Cardinals, because that's, you know, something we've talked about quite a bit, is like not creating a hole or a need where you already have a body. And while Gunter is definitely not a, you know, every down player, there's few of those in the NFL along the defensive line. And so if you can get a 60% rotational guy at a cheap contract that can produce like Gunter does, I mean, that's a slam dunk.
And, you know, Gunter would be one of the players I want them to bring back. Drake for me is an interesting case, because I think his situation it's not nearly as complicated as it's more complicated than it should be. It wouldn't be nearly as complicated if they didn't have David Johnson and his basically immovable contract on the roster right now. When we talk about salary saving moves, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But there's a proposal that I saw in The Athletic that didn't make any sense at all. I'll talk about in the next segment, the scenario they proposed for the way to get David Johnson off the books, there would be no point in doing that. Now, my contributor, Chuck Harris, who writes for me and also runs a Cardinals Facebook page, he proposed a way to make the money work for Drake, 3 years, $16.5 million. Based on what Scott Bordeaux of The Athletic said, from what he heard at the Combine, there's two things the Cardinals don't want to do. They don't want to pay Drake more than $5 million a year, and they don't want to go to 4 years. And I can understand that. 3 years and 15, I can live with that, honestly, because $5 million a year isn't that bad. I think where you start getting into trouble is when you hit the 8 plus or the 8 to 12, when you hit the David Johnson range contract. I think I would feel more comfortable giving Drake that sort of deal than I did when David Johnson got his after 2017, even though at the time I was all about that. Now, Drake should go get paid what he can get paid. If he can get the 8 to 10 million reportedly he wants per year, definitely go get it. I have no problem with that. If someone's willing to pay him for it, good for them and good for him. And I hope he goes on to prove that he is worth that contract. We know he's a perfect fit in Arizona. The trouble is that, well, how much was him? How much was Scheme? How much was Kyler Murray getting? It was just kind of a mix of everything, and they love him. But his skill set seems to be that you could find in the draft as well. So now, Kenyon Drake, I want back. I think the 4 years and $25 million that I thought that he would get, that's right in line with what Austin Ekeler got. I don't think that's an amount that the Cardinals probably should do unless they can unload that David Johnson deal, and I would be comfortable with it. Especially if they front load the deal a little bit. Now, Rodney Gunter for me is a priority. Maybe not even Rodney Gunter too. I think Zach Kerr proved his worth, and it was interesting how his year went, because he had signed a multi-year deal with the Broncos last year, then ended up getting cut and was on the street for a few weeks before the Cardinals picked him up. And now I was really interested to see what they say on SpotTrack, like for his market value is $4 million a year. That's, you know, I think that would be more than I'd want to pay for a guy that I picked up off the street, but he was really quite solid in his play. And I know that the Cardinals need, we want them to add probably two starting defensive linemen this year in the offseason, ideally in free agency. But if you do that with one of your own, or maybe even with Gunter and Kerr, if you can pay the two of them, if you can get them each paying them between, you know, $7 to $10 million next year between the two, I think that's a steal. And then after that, kind of the biggest priority, and it's a slam dunk he's going to be back on the team. That'd be kicker Zane Gonzalez. He's a restricted free agent. And I've even seen out there some Cardinals fans proposing or supporting the idea of putting a second round tag on him, for a second round tender on Gonzalez. And I'm like, you don't need to do that. As a financial thing as it is, I think the original round tender, which since he was a seventh round pick, I believe, they would, if they could still match and if they let him go, they'd get a seventh round pick. That's not that big a deal ultimately. But it still pays him, I think, an estimated $2.1 million. And the second round tender would pay him more than $3 million, I think. And if you don't need to pay someone $1 million to keep him, don't pay him $1 million to keep, especially when you have control. And Zane Gonzalez, his NFL career, I mean, we've seen how he kicked at Arizona State. We saw how well he did last year. But we've also seen some inconsistencies throughout his NFL career. And if there's one thing that we know about kickers is that they can be great one year and then it can go away in a hurry. We saw it with Chandler Catanzaro. And so I don't need to sign him long term. Get him on that original round tender. No one's going to match it. And if they do, if you really like him, you still can match it. And then you pay him next offseason once he has another great season. But other than that, you look at the free agents that they've got. Charles Clay, eh. You look at the DJ Foster. Well, he's a nice story, but he's a guy, he's easily replaceable on the offensive line. A.Q. Shipley's an interesting case because he really was the leader of that offensive line, but the Cardinals are in a situation where that is one position they feel confident in. They're ready for Mason Cole to be the starter, and so it makes sense to let Shipley see if he goes elsewhere and gets paid, and if he doesn't, he can always bring him back. But if he's looking for $3 to $5 million a year for another couple of years to play, let him go. After that, you've got a bunch of guys that it doesn't really matter if you bring him back. Cassius Mars wasn't that great. Brooks Reed didn't do anything. You got Joe Walker. You know, he was a nice contributor. And then you've got, so there's really no one else that you think, oh, you've got to bring them back. They had some veteran defensive linemen, but those are guys who are replaceable. So pretty much for me, Rodney Gunter, Zach Kerr, Zane Gonzalez, those are really it. And then Kenyon Drake is, if you can get him back at the right price. Other than that, there's really no one else on the free agency on the team that I'm like, you got to have him back.
Zane's an interesting one. And you know, I'm glad you brought him up because kickers are so, you know, you pointed out, like, he's had one solid season. And so the question becomes, do you pay him? Like, what is your option at this point? What's the best route to go with that? If anybody, I know people are going to disagree with me, and that's fine. You can post your Twitter comments at Senor Root, and he'll take it. He'll take it up with me later. But the reality is, like, when it comes to the kicker position, I think it's kind of like running backs. Like, it's easy to find one. Like, unless they're special, you don't pay them. So, you know, Steven Gostkowski, obviously a Justin Tucker type. Like, I don't even know how to pronounce that kicker's name in Houston that just got paid. $9 million guaranteed for a kicker is a lot of freaking money, dude. And Jess kind of hit on it. Like, these guys are year to year. I mean, so how do you – I don't know. I don't know how you justify paying it. So I'm with you. Like, if you can get Zane back at a you know, reasonable rate. But, I mean, Zane was a fifth-round draft pick too, right?
I think it was a seventh, I think.
So, I mean, that's the thing is so many kickers, even like the best kickers, are undrafted typically. And Zane was drafted because everybody thought so highly of him. And he still, you know, failed and busted out or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I know it was the Browns, but still, I mean, like, it's just such an odd position. I don't know. It's one of those ones, like, unless you have a special guy, you know, like an Andy Lee at punter type where they're – I mean, Andy Lee's been around, 17 years now?
A long time.
And so those are the types that you re-sign and pay. And even those guys get let go eventually. I mean, the maybe greatest kicker in NFL history, Adam Vinatieri, you know, went to the Colts. So you just – I mean, you have to be patient and understanding with it and kind of – you have to believe in a guy, but you also have to give yourself an out. And I just think paying a ridiculous amount for a kicker, and I'm not saying they're going to, but you can't tie up much in a kicker at this juncture when it is not, I would say, the piece of the puzzle. Like, this isn't Catanzaro in 16 where he missed three field goals that made a huge difference in the season's outcome, right?
Right.
So, yeah, and I mean, I'm with you on the rest of the guys. I mean, this it's a really hard time, and you wrote about it, and I wrote about it today. Like, there's a reason they didn't even get any comp picks, and it's just because they don't have much talent on the roster. So I would say there's not a ton of need at this juncture to retain the talent on the roster, or that was on the roster. Wouldn't you kind of agree with that sentiment, unfortunately?
Yeah. If you're looking at anybody that has a chance to come back, if you look at the defensive backfield, and we'll talk about how they need not a starter at safety, not a starter at cornerback, but I think they need a veteran depth guy. Kind of like they brought in Tremaine Brock last year. He ended up being a starter, but Chris Banjo carved out a nice little role, whether it's Chris Banjo or Charles Washington. Banjo got a little more playing time actually on defense. I think he's a guy they might bring back. He's probably not going to start, but he's a guy that you'd be comfortable with playing on defense if there were an injury to, say, Jalen Thompson or Deontay Thompson or Buda Baker if need be. He'd really be the only other one I'm like, yeah, bring him back. Because the rest of the guys, special teamers, guys that make their money on special teams, the truth is they're a dime a dozen. They're not really a dime a dozen, but guys that you can find in making impacts on special teams, there's lots of those guys around.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at how the Cardinals found these guys, they were mostly through the waivers and you know, undrafted free agency and things like that. So, and I think that's one of the things they've done a nice job with. Dennis Gardeck, Zeke Turner, you know, they picked up Charles Washington and Banjo, like you said. It is, I would venture to say, is one of the strengths of this regime, along with the running back position. So that's why I don't put a ton of, like, stock into it. I even wrote about it the other day, like, Drake deserves whatever he gets. Like, I will never begrudge a player for that. So if a team pays him, you know, 3 years, $18 million, good. Like, go get the money, dude. And if it's more than that, go get it. But at the same time, you look at it. I mean, Rashard Mendenhall and Andre Ellington in 13, Andre Ellington in 14. You know, Chris Johnson and David Johnson in 2015. Chris Johnson, David Johnson in 2016. Adrian Peterson in 2017, like, they've done a nice job of finding running backs to cash in, so to speak, and play well enough. I don't think you look at any Cardinals team from the Steve Keim era and go, man, if they only had a better running back, this team would have just, you know, that would have been put them over the top. Like, did you ever say that in this, you know, in this window? And so that's where, you know, it's a difficult time and things of that. And I think Gunter, you know, and maybe Zane Gonzalez are really kind of the guys that you focus on, and knowing that one of the strengths of the GM has been those special teams guys, has been running backs to this point.
One other player that I would consider bringing back, and it would depend on his health, would be Marcus Gilbert. They feel comfortable with Justin Murray. I think that means they will probably not go out and spend a lot of money in free agency. But let's be honest, despite the injury concerns, there probably isn't a more talented player that you could find at right tackle in Marcus Gilbert. Now, granted, he's coming off an ACL. It happened early enough in the year that you can count on him to be ready for the season. And the Cardinals have had good success with players coming back, whether it's Carson Palmer, A.Q. Shipley, or even Tyrann Mathieu to some degree. He bounced back. He didn't bounce back as quickly. The truth is, I wouldn't mind having him come back, and he probably won't cost a lot of money. And then you could still draft a guy, and it doesn't matter. And that would be the extent. There's guys out there you can get, but Marcus Gilbert would be an okay guy to re-sign. I'd get it if they don't do it, but yeah. Marcus Gilbert I'd be okay with, and I'd actually be okay with Max Garcia as well, familiar with the system, as long as you're not paying him more than the $1.5 to $2 million that they brought him in for last year, because he's a good veteran interior guy to bring back. Not critical, but fine.
And I think that's the biggest caveat, and you laid it out nicely, is at the right price, you'd bring back any of these guys, or I wouldn't say any, but most of these guys, right? And so that's the key to any of this, is if you look at Gunter and Zane as your 1-2 type that need to be brought back, and need being the emphasis there, you know, it's tough to go from there and say these guys need to come back. And so that's the thing, is they're all welcome back. Marcus Gilbert, you know, obviously Kenyon Drake, Banjo, any of those guys are welcome back, but it's got to be cost prohibitive, or it can't be cost prohibitive.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast of SRF Cardinals Talk on the Web, we're going to talk a little bit about things the Cardinals can do to increase their salary cap space. Right now, they've got about $39.7 million approximately. What can they do to increase that? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. After re-signing Larry Fitzgerald and DJ Humphreys, their cap space has gotten down to less than $40 million, which is, that's not a terrible amount, but it is in the lower half of the league. And if you're looking to get some impact players, that money will go in a hurry. So, what can the Cardinals do to increase that? I wrote about a few of those options, and we're not just talking about cutting people. We're kind of looking at, now, I wrote a few, and probably Seth did as well, wrote about salary-saving moves that they can make to cut players, but, you know, when you do something like cut J.R. Sweezy, you're creating a need. You cut Patrick Peterson, you're creating a need. Some of those areas where you're going to cut to save money, you're going to create a need that you have to pay someone else to replace him. So I wrote about a few things that they could do. One, obviously, is trade David Johnson. Trading him, if they're able to get him off the books to the contract as it is going to save him $10 million, because the cap hit right now is a little over $14 million. If they trade him, they're on the books for the prorated signing bonus, and that guaranteed salary goes somewhere else. The problem is his $10.2 million in salary is guaranteed, and so people are in fact, I'm going to talk about the one. For The Athletic, they said that could the Texans trade for David Johnson, and they suggested that two things would have to happen. One, that the Cardinals would have to tag a pick on it, so basically a salary dump, throw a include a draft pick with David Johnson to take it. And on top of that, too, if they could eat about $6 million of that salary structure, that would make no sense at all. Because if the Cardinals were to eat they'd have to restructure it so they paid him $6 million up front, leave the Texans to pay $4 million. But if that's the case, if they have to eat six plus the $4 million that they already are due to pay him, well, count against the cap for the signing bonus, trading him in that scenario would save exactly $0. And if you're going to trade David Johnson for $0, why don't you just keep David Johnson on the roster where he might actually contribute? Because if you wanted to re-sign Drake and you were counting on trading Johnson to save salary, I mean, you might as well do what you did last year. We had Drake and Johnson and Chase Edmonds on the roster at the same time. Don't trade him and a draft pick to save no money.
Yeah, and that's the interesting idea behind it is just shedding David Johnson to shed David Johnson. I mean, you and I are pretty dialed in, and we know, one, that he's not happy with his role. But I think, I mean, we've talked about this. That's a good thing. Wouldn't you agree? Like, we don't want a guy to be happy to sit the bench for 100 and – or for – you know, $10, $15 million a year. So the fact that he's upset about it, I think, is important. But two, it's not like he's been a malcontent in the locker room or anything. It's not like he's struggling to find his place on the team or anything. Like, it's just, I mean, it's just not worked out. And so, I don't know, man. It's weird to me. This isn't even really an Odell Beckham situation where he seems to be an issue within the community, not that Odell was ever an issue within the community, but like issue within the team community, so to speak. I don't want that to be misconstrued. So, but you know, like within the team, I mean, we've never heard anything negative about David Johnson. We've heard that he shows up to work, that he puts 150% in at practice, in the weight room. I mean, probably too much in the weight room if we're being completely honest. And he's a great guy and teammate. It's just, it hasn't worked out. And so to me that, I mean, that's just a hard sell for me because that's a move you make when a guy's a malcontent, a cancer, when a guy's when he's a distraction to the roster and the organization and what you're trying, especially young guys like Kyler and Andy Isabella and these type of guys. It just seems like a decision to make to free up or potentially justify bringing back Kenyon Drake. And if that's your goal at that point, just keep him, eat the salary, bring back Drake, you know, cut David in 2021. And then
David could know be a $10 million a year kick returner. Yeah, what's the worst that could happen?
Well, but on the same time, like, know that you have a backup in place. Like, you have your number two back if Kenyon goes down. And the way Kliff used running backs, it's not like he split carries. I mean, he wants a workhorse. So, I mean, I don't want to say Chase Edmonds can't do it but the one extended look he got injured. So, it's tough. I don't get it. I'd love to trade David Johnson just to get out from under his contract, even if you save any money this year whatsoever. So if you're not eating or breaking even, if you're saving, I mean, you're going to eat some, but like if you're saying like, hey, we can save $4 million. So now you're at, you know, $43 million in cap space instead of, you know, eating any dead money. Like, I'm fine with that. But as soon as you talk about anything else, I just can't get behind it.
Another move that I think it's going to be inevitable, and that's one of the easier things. I don't know how easy it's going to be, but Hassan Reddick. They're not going to cut him because his salary is fully guaranteed, but he really hasn't found his place maybe, I mean, they like him maybe as an outside pass rusher, an outside linebacker, but Steve Keim made it clear they're looking for another pass rusher opposite Chandler Jones. If they thought Hassan Reddick was the guy, they probably wouldn't say that. And so I think you will see Hassan Reddick traded this offseason in some sort of deal, whether it's the rumor out there. So Stephon Diggs was working out in Cardinals gear, whatever that means. Now, the Cardinals tacked on Jonathan Cooper to that with that second round pick to trade for Chandler Jones. Part of that was simply, I'm sure part of that was the salary ramifications, because he's a guy they weren't going to keep, and by trading him, all that they were out was the signing bonus and not have to eat the guaranteed salary. Because if you cut Hassan Reddick, you save nothing. You trade him, hey, I would love to see them take Hassan Reddick and their seventh round pick, move up into the sixth round, be done with the draft early. I'm always for that. And you save yourself $2.8 million in the cap for a guy that you don't think was really going to have a role on the team. I think that's one of the easier things to do. Trading or extending the contract of Patrick Peterson, I think, is inevitable, even though they said they won't trade him. I think a contract extension needs to happen. That will save them money in the cap the way they structure it. Or they could also extend the contract of Chandler Jones. Outside of that, there's not a lot they can do salary-wise overall. Other than just cutting guys that they're going to have to replace.
Right. And that's a stupid idea anyways. And so, you know, I think that's the biggest thing to emphasize, is that when you look at what their options are, they don't have a ton. I mean, I guess you could potentially move some of Justin Pugh's money down the road, but is that a risk you want to take? You know, you, like you said, you extend Patrick and Chandler, you could probably kick a ton of bonus money.
On Chandler, you could actually say how much, I can't remember what it's like. You got 2 years. So if you restructure eight, it frees up four this year, but adds four next year with Pugh. Because there's 2 years left. If you restructured six, you would just create two for this year and two, and then add two the next 2 years. That's not terrible, but it doesn't give you a ton of space. That No. might be one of those moves that they make closer to training camp when they're more flush against the cap, just to free up some space. That I could see happening.
Right. And so, you know, that's the thing, is there's not a lot of options. And you know, you mentioned the Stephon Diggs thing, you know. So obviously if you trade for Stephon Diggs, you're taking on all his salary. So I think it's about $11 million this year. And so you're saving roughly one, so let's call it, you know, a 10 net that you're gaining. I mean, so now all of a sudden your cap space went from 39 to, let's just call it 30 for easy math. Right? Like, and now you're short a draft pick too. So, I mean, that's the thing, is like, this isn't Major League Baseball. This isn't the NBA where you can go over or beyond the cap and make the, I mean, you can, but typically what happens is you just end up pushing money down the line. And so we've seen the Cardinals do that. In 17 and 18, they were, you know, or sorry, 18 and 19, they were, you know, one of the highest teams in the NFL with dead money. And they were also some of the worst teams in the NFL. So I'm not saying they go hand in hand, but what I am saying is when you don't have the money to bring in extra talent, that's typically what's going to happen. So I think, you know, unless you're, I think if they trade Hassan Reddick in a Stephon Diggs type deal, I think it would be closer to draft time when you have a greater understanding of what Washington's going to do. And you have a better feeling about how many quarterbacks are going to get taken in the top seven. Because that's going to make the difference. Like, if you trade for Stephon Diggs, obviously you're not going to be in on CeeDee Lamb anymore. I mean, if you took CeeDee Lamb, that would be insane. But, you know, if you trade for Stephon Diggs, now all of a sudden you're looking at, okay, do I have a chance at Isaiah Simmons? Do I have a chance at Tristan Wirfs? Am I talking about maybe trading back then? Like, is eighth in the spot? Like, so there's just so many little decisions to go into it on top of the cap space that you're adding, subtracting, all of this stuff. I think your idea is, you know, obviously what we'd hope for, like, oh, hey, we're trading you our fourth and Hassan Reddick for an extra third, and we went and got, you know, Cam Akers in the third round because, you know, so now we have a running back. We didn't have to re-sign Kenyon Drake, and now we just freed up, a million and a half. You know, all of that is kind of how it plays in. I think it's going to be one of those deals that probably happens after the initial rush of free agency. And as you said, kind of if it happens, it'll be during or leading up to the draft, if not during the draft, to kind of create some more space.
Cut on it to the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on to actual free agent targets. We're looking at the offensive side of the ball. That's coming next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now we're going to get into free agency outside the Cardinals, offensive side of the ball. I think what we're going to look at are number one priority has to be maybe the right tackle position. They've got their left tackle with Justin Pugh and J.R. Sweezy. They got their guard set. You've got Mason Cole. If they bring back Shipley, you've got Shipley and Mason Cole and, you know, Lamont Gilliard as well. That's a position. The center is actually kind of in good shape. Right tackle, you've got Justin Murray, and then question marks. Who are some guys that the Cardinals could target? And let's state right now, I think the talk of Jack Conklin that there was a few weeks ago, that was more more probing around the possibility if they did not come to terms with DJ Humphries, I think. One, do you think, if you were the Cardinals, do you think they're going to go after a Brian Bulaga or a Jack Conklin? And if not them, who else could be in the mix in free agency?
I think they're still going to go after Conklin. I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, you know, we talked about cash trap. So I've heard from people I trust that he's going to get an offer of $590 from a couple teams in that range. Wow. So, I mean, you're talking $18 million a year. So you're talking about paying him. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's definitely better than DJ Humphries, but you're talking about paying him $3 million more a year than DJ Humphries. And in one off season, sinking $33 million, you know, in a per year average in the tackle positions. I guess if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it, right, with the Kyler Murray contract. But still, I mean, that's a tough sell. You know, Bulaga is an interesting one because he's an older, injury-prone guy, right?
And there's a history of when the Green Bay Packers let you go, it usually means you should leave them alone.
Right. And so I think there's a couple interesting guys to kind of – look over, so to speak, in this situation. If you're looking for, you know, if you're looking for a long-term solution, I'm not sure there is one. I know that arch nemesis Cedric Ogbui is available. I'm not sure that he's going to be on the radar. And he's a young guy. He'll be 28 this season. So, you know, that'd be like a 3 or 4 year type deal. Who is the guy that replaced him? George Fant is another one. Same type of thing. I mean, I don't know if he's even an upgrade from Justin Murray. So those are two guys that are, I would say, quote unquote, long term because they're under 30. I think the plus 30 market is really interesting because there's a lot of options. You know, I think a guy, you know, we mentioned Bulaga. I think a guy like DeMar Dotson out of Tampa Bay, but he's going to be 35 this year. You know, Kelvin Beachum out of the Jets, he'll be 31 this year. You know, Mike Rimmers from the Giants, he'll be 31 this year. Like, you know, even like a Jared Valdir from the Broncos, or wait, no, he was with the Packers last, will be 33 this year. Those are all, you know, like stopgap guys. So if you want to, I would say, one, if you hire, if you sign one of those guys, you're basically saying you're not going to take Tristan Wirfs, Jedrick Wills, Mekhi Becton, or Andrew Thomas at 8, right? Like, you can't draft, or you can't sign one of those guys and then draft somebody as well with your first pick. And so if you do that, you know, maybe you're looking on day two, like an Ezra Cleveland type, or you know, one of these, you know, secondary, you know, maybe a John Runyon Jr. type on day two. But there is one guy that is super interesting to me that could be a potential long-term solution. And I don't know what's going to happen with him. I don't know how much money he's going to command, because he's been an odd kind of swing tackle, and he's done it extremely well for the Eagles. And I'm not going to even try to pronounce his name, but the last name is Vitae. He's only going to be 27 this year. I mean, if you're looking for kind of a discounted upgrade at starter, I think Vitae would be the one guy that you could justify bringing in over Murray or Gilbert. Outside of that, though, I don't see anybody on this list from a more than 1 year standpoint that you would be interested in right now.
Right. And George Fant is the name that came up from one of the local radio shows, and he's a guy I actually wouldn't mind. He has some injury issues, but he's a guy that's been on the bench and has been a starter. So depending, if you get him at the right price, you could still draft a tackle early, especially if that's how the board builds, because where they're drafting at 8, there's some really good tackles, and it almost seems like if they address the tackle or wide receiver, kind of feels like what it is. And you know, if you take care of the receiver position, it makes sense to go tackle. But if you bring in a tackle that you pay it, then it makes sense to go receiver. Jared Valdir would be interesting, though I don't know how much you can... he's interesting in the fact that you know he can do it. He's got some injuries that he's dealt with. And then the on-again, off-again nature of his relationship with the NFL also worries me a little bit. He was solid when he was here. He struggled with right tackle that first year. I think he's gotten adjusted to it. So it'd be an interesting thing to do. There's so many names out there, and you know, you look at the names out there. So you've got, I mean, if you wanna look, you know, Greg Robinson, nah, Jason Peters, but he's really old and he's a left tackle, let's be honest.
I was going to say, he's a left tackle. You can't, yeah.
Jermaine Ifedi, nope. As much as the Seahawks have disliked him, he might be, like, especially if they're going to go with that running game again, he's not a bad guy to look at, and he's younger. And I don't know what the interest of his will be, what
to
sort of
back.
Interest he will have across the league, because his reputation is very mixed across the NFL, at least what you feel like out from an outsider's point of view. You get the feeling, one, he's awful, and two, that he was kind of necessary for that Seattle line and wasn't as awful as you thought.
Yeah, and so I think that there's going to be a run on these guys, these secondary guys, because it's going to be mostly – while Jack Conklin and Bulaga and probably Peters and Andrew Whitworth, who we kind of skipped over, you know, all these guys get wined and dined, it's going to be the George Fants and the Vitais and the Effettis and those guys getting the quick, you know, 3 years, $15 million deals done because they're just cashing in. Like, they're making sure that they don't – they get to a spot before these other guys sign, and now teams are, you know, going to wait. I mean, if you're not going to land the big fish, I don't know if you really want to, you know, cast your line, so to speak, for a tackle. I mean, if you're not going to get Conklin or even a Bulaga, who, you know, like we talked about, is probably a bad bet at that point, I would rather wait till the draft and see how the draft falls at that point than gamble on a secondary player, unless you get, like I said, Vitai or even a Fant or a Fetty at the right price. But, you know, you can say that with basically almost all free agents.
Now, running back, that's an interesting position there, because it kind of ties into, well, are they going to bring Kenyon Drake back? If they don't, are they going to stand pat? Are they going to trade David Johnson? If they trade David Johnson and don't re-sign Kenyon Drake, obviously they need to bring in a running back. That said, an interesting name that came up, I was surprised to hear it on Burns and Gambo, is Gambo said that the Cardinals might have some interest in Carlos Hyde. That's not a bad way to go. And I don't know what sort of money he will get, because now Spotrac says he's going to get a $3 million a year average, so 2 years, $6 million. That's really reasonable. And especially if you end up moving on from David Johnson, that still allows you to draft a guy, even if you want to go round two. It puts you in a good position running back-wise. I'm interested to see how the running game evolves this second year, if they're able to have the same success again. Carlos Hyde is an interesting name. Deion Lewis, to me, becomes very interesting now since he was just cut by the Titans. I don't think he's going to command a lot of money, but he does have that receiving ability that even though the Cardinals didn't use Drake, they did throw the ball a little bit to him, but he does give you that flexibility to catch the ball as well. Other names out there, I'm not in love with really any of the names out there. And there's not much.
No, there's not. And there's two that are interesting to me that were Raiders, Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington.
But those would connection be with Cliff Kingsbury.
But both of those would be kind of backup guys too. They wouldn't be, you know, if you lost Drake or Drake moved on, that would be kind of to fight with Chase Edmonds more than to replace David Johnson and or a potential draft pick.
Right. DeAndre Washington, you could viably have Johnson, Washington, Edmonds, and a draft pick on the roster, and you wouldn't worry about it.
Right, exactly. So it's not a Carlos Hyde type signing or a Kenyon Drake type signing where you go, oh, there is one guy I'm interested to get your take in, because I'm not a huge fan of him, but he seems to produce a ton, and that's Jordan Howard. I don't think it's a fit. I don't think it's a need. I'm big on just letting, you know, these guys kind of wean themselves out of the NFL and you know, use them and then get rid of them. But what would you think of a Jordan Howard if it was in that same type of Carlos Hyde range, maybe even the Kenyon Drake, what they're offering range at $5 million a year? Would you think that'd be too much?
Maybe. He had nearly 1,000 yards. I mean, he's been – the problem is – since his rookie year, he's been in decline. So he's had more work than Drake did. But at the same time, he's rushed for 38, almost 3,900 yards in four seasons. And when he was in a limited role with the Eagles last year, he was productive. His yards per carry went up to 4.4. I wouldn't hate him. I don't think I'd want to, like, I don't want 3 years, 15, maybe 2.10, 2.9. I'd be comfortable with there. Especially if you still draft a guy or maybe not, but he's a guy. I think if you're looking at that trio, when you look last year with David Johnson, Kenyon Drake, Chase Edmonds, I think that would create good competition to where I wouldn't hate that at all, actually.
And the interesting thing is I think he's a full year younger than Drake. So they've been in the league the same amount of time, but he's a full year younger. But he's got, like you said, he's probably got two full years of wear on him. I mean, like, even like a Ty Montgomery would be an interesting kind of fit again as a potential backup. But from a starter perspective, I mean, it's really Drake, maybe Hyde. You know, we just threw out Howard, but I mean, that's really it, right?
I mean, all the other names are going to command too much. Like, Derrick Henry, great, but he's looking for big money. You get Melvin Gordon looking for big money as well. You know, a name that actually, I don't think he's got a whole bunch left in the tank, but I think LeSean McCoy might be successful in this system here, even at age 32. Obviously, you wouldn't sign him with the idea that he's going to be the guy. But
it goes back to what you said at that. Like, you sign McCoy and you have Johnson as your lead backup, and then you draft a guy on day three, like an Eno Benjamin type, you know, that's a good receiver that could be a Duke Johnson type. And then maybe in 2 years, you know, or even next year, you look for a true lead back when you can move on from the DJ salary and you know, and McCoy's gone. And then all of a sudden you've got Eno and Chase. And now all of a sudden you can bring in a lead back, a true kind of lead back, because you have the financial ability to do so. So yeah, that, I mean, same type of thing. I wouldn't hate that.
Receiver, tight end. This is a really interesting group because, one, there's the feeling that at tight end, well, why worry about it? Cause the Cardinals aren't going to use them. They've already got Max Williams signed for two more years. They brought in Dan Arnold. Now, some people are saying, run with Arnold. Okay, I'm going to tell you this, Cardinals fans. We've fallen in love with young tight ends before. Do you remember Ricky Seals-Jones that rookie year? We were in love with him. Then he was disappointing. Darren Fells, we were impressed. He turned into a good tight end, but he was disappointing with the Cardinals. Rob Hausler, yeah, disappointing. There's Dan Arnold. I'm not going to count on Dan Arnold because he's young. I'm like, yeah, bring him in. But with Dan Arnold on the roster, I am not making any roster decisions about free agents at the positions because of a Dan Arnold. Therefore, the names out there are still kind of interesting. People have thrown out, now your guy Johnny on your side has said that Austin Hooper might be an option. That feels like a waste of money if you're going to throw a lot of money at an Austin Hooper or even an Eric Ebron who's going to command a decent amount of money. But I will say this. As much as we say that that Cliff Kingsbury is not going to use the tight end, I'll say that their tight ends were not great receivers last year. And Cliff Kingsbury has used a tight end. Let's go back to his first year at Texas Tech when he didn't have all his 80,000 receivers. He did have a Jason Morrow, had 106 receptions, one of the top receivers in the entire country that year. He can use a tight end. He just hasn't had a tight end that he's wanted to throw the ball that much to. So if they did have an Eric Ebron or an Austin Hooper, I think that offense would change, as we've seen that he is willing to make changes offensively. It's just that until you get a guy, maybe Dan Arnold's that guy, but until you have a true pass-catching tight end, he's not going to count him in for it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, tight end's a difficult position in the NFL, and there's a reason that you never see the good ones enter free agency, and then when they do, you always have this worry, this Jimmy Graham worry, right? Like, you remember the Jimmy Graham for Max Unger and a pick, and, you know, the Saints clearly got the better end of that deal. And so that's the concern with Hooper is that, I mean, it's not the same offense, obviously, but played in a similar open offense to what Graham played in with the Saints. And, you know, is he going to have the same success? I mean, that's a tough sell. So, you know, the tight end position, Austin Hooper, I think the Hooper love is because they were realistically in on Greg Olsen. Now, people I know and like have told me that that was 100% to drive the price up. So who knows, you know, but I mean, Hooper's going to get too much money again. I don't know if you can't justify the $8 million a year he's going to get. He's not Kelsey. He's not Gronk. He's not George Kittle. And to pay him $8 million, seems foolhardy. Eric Ebron's a really intriguing one because he would kind of fit that H-back role. And so you get Ebron on like a $4 to $5 million deal, kind of like what you're looking at with running, you know, kind of the same price that you're looking at with the running backs. You could sell me on that because I think he would be a natural fit in this offense at an H-back role and probably put up really good numbers. The problem would be
also that the spot track estimated market value is $9.5 million.
Oh, for Ebron, really? Wow. That's well, yeah. There's no way you could talk me into that. That's ridiculous. But I mean, he's the type of guy you would be looking for, ideally, obviously. You know, from there, it's just again, it's just not a class where you're going, got to have this guy or like got to make a big play for this guy. It just doesn't all line up and make sense in this offseason.
How about Bradley Saul? Yeah, he's a tight end now.
Hey, as long as he keeps making money, good for him, man.
I'm thrilled for him. I'm glad he's not on the Cardinals roster playing left tackle anymore. But hey, now the receiver position is interesting because, you know, the Cardinals have a bunch of guys at receiver. We suggested, this is a while back, it wouldn't be a terrible thing to go out and pay Emmanuel Sanders. I'm a little bit concerned after the production tailed off drastically down the stretch with the 49ers. But you do need someone that can be a difference maker. You throw out names like Breshad Perriman. He is basically one of the same guys that they already have. You could go out and trade for Stephon Diggs, and I would love that deal because he's a low-end one who fits this offense. He's under control. Conte's not going to be paid a ton of money. Amari Cooper would be fantastic. He's just going to get paid way too much money. Robbie Anderson isn't even really a number one. I mean, the guys that are out there. I'm like, you've already got those guys on the roster. Are they really an improvement over the potential that you have with Hakeem Butler and Keyshawn Johnson and Christian Kirk, or even bringing back Demir Byrd? Are they real improvements over that?
Well, and I think that's where you have to look at. And you know, when people talk about, well, they just drafted 19 receivers, it's like, okay, but look at the positions they play and then look at what they've talked about. They need a true outside guy. They've got a bunch of true inside guys. They do like Keyshawn Johnson still, but he's not a true X outside guy. He's more of a Z, you know, flanker type than he is an X. They have Hakeem Butler, but as you said with Dan Arnold, you don't go into this offseason go, well, we got Hakeem Butler, so we're good, right? Like, that's just negligence. That's not to say you force anything, but that's just the reality. You don't go into the offseason and go, well, we're good here. I mean, we've got an X receiver. And, you know, Isabella, I think they were planning long-term for Isabella to be a guy that they groomed to potentially replace Fitz as that kind of dynamic slot outside receiver mix that they can have. And so when you look at the wide receivers, you know, and tying this all back, you mentioned Breshad Perriman. He's an interesting one to me in the fact that he's a lot like Hakeem Butler, you know, or a DK Metcalf type, where he's looking like a kind of a one-trick pony type, but that trick is really freaking good, man. I mean, really good. So is that a bad thing? And then you look at a guy like Robbie Anderson. Again, same thing. He's a one-trick pony. And that trick, you go from 6 to 7 million for Breshad Perriman to 12 to 13. I mean, so you're doubling the money. And yeah, Robbie's been better, but both of those guys you're looking at to be just another cog in the wheel. You're not looking at either of them to be your true kind of dominant number one. What you're saying is like, hey, we'll have a really diverse and kind of well-rounded receiving corps, and what you'll end up with is a $13 million a year player that plays like a number two, and fans are going to get really, you know, irritated and look at him as a bust. It's not his fault he got paid that much. Like, that's what the market dictated. I don't think, you know, obviously they're going to be in on AJ Green if he even gets to free agency, which he's not, is he? I mean,
no, they're going to franchise tag him. So he would be fantastic, though he has been hurt and he is old.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Cooper's really the only available guy when you look at it as a potential kind of number one type. But again, you're talking $20 million. I mean, even if you said got him at 18, whew, that's a lot of yak for a wide receiver, man. Like, I just... You know, and that's what makes me laugh is people are like, well, you know, you don't draft wide receivers early. You can get them anywhere. And perhaps, but you get them anywhere, and then you have to find a replacement for them in 4 years or 3 years, actually, because, you know, they want to get paid. And they're not, you know, receivers aren't shy. They'll tell you they want to get paid.
It's so true.
So it's interesting. One name to think about, and I'll just kind of leave this with the receivers. What about Paul Richardson? Like, you know, a guy that
I've liked him since he was in Seattle. He just has never
stayed healthy.
What he needed to be. We've seen him make incredible plays, and he's got the speed. He has the potential, but he's been, for lack of a better word, disappointing, especially what they were expecting him to do in Washington when they signed him. After he had his 2017 season, 44 catches, 703 yards, you thought he was ready to take the next step, and he never did. And he's been bothered by injuries, which makes him another red flag. But if you can get him, if you get him on the Michael Crabtree contract, I'm less concerned.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. So it's a tough sell, man.
Yeah, receiver's going to be interesting to see what they do there. Now, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, the final segment, we're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball, which is where there's a lot of work to be done. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we've said for a while the Cardinals probably need to get three starters on defense, at least two. You have to get at least two starters, legitimate starters in free agency on the defensive side of the ball. However, if we're talking free agency, I think we can probably leave the defensive backfield alone because they like who they have as their starters. you might add a veteran starting capable player on at cornerback and at safety. And I think that's all you need to do. Someone of the ilk of Tremaine Brock without actually being Tremaine Brock at cornerback. Someone like Chris Banjo, who isn't necessarily Chris Banjo. I think at the defensive backfield, that's about what you're going to get, because they're counting on Robert Alford, right or wrong, they're counting on him. Byron Murphy's going to be their slot guy. Patrick Peterson, as far as we know, is going to remain on the roster. So after that, they need someone with maybe some... you probably want some starting experience in case they need to start. But they also have guys that can bring back in Kevin Peterson or Chris Jones. I don't know what they feel about them, but... And the same thing, so I'm not looking for any name at all in the defensive backfield.
No, and I don't think so. I think it, again, it's... I mean, unless you can guarantee that you're getting Jalen Ramsey, I don't see any reason to... Again, yeah, any names, solid names, known names. It at this point, it just has to be... It just has to be guys that can, like you said, be a third safety, probably, like a depth safety, or and hopefully even a fourth safety, but more importantly, like a veteran safety in that defensive backfield.
And it's got to be someone basically who can play special teams. A name that, you know, you've never been able to count on him, but I think he fits the bill would be a guy like Jason Verrett. Played for San Francisco this last year because he has high-end potential, but if you bring him in as your fourth cornerback, you could put up with, and then he wouldn't have to play a lot and then he wouldn't get hurt, but he's a guy that has, I mean, talent. He had number one corner talent. Now that the injuries have probably sapped that a bit, but he wouldn't be a bad guy to bring on the back end of that roster. Other names out there, 30-year-old Rashawn Melvin. I know that. I think that's a name that's been tossed around a little bit in years past. Guys of that sort of ilk, I think, would fit in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. So it's just, I mean, there's not much to go after at this point when you have the needs we're about to address in the front seven.
So let's hit the linebackers, because inside linebacker, I think. Now, I don't know if it's their number one priority, but it feels like it probably should be. They want to add a pass rusher opposite of Chandler Jones. However, the names that are out there, they're just going to cost way too much. So let's look at inside linebacker. They're going to be costly, but there's some interesting names out there. I think Corey Littleton is the one the entire world would like to have because of his coverage ability. I will say he is a tad lean for Vance Joseph traditionally. I mean, he's like 228. I detailed this last offseason. I don't think he's ever had a starter that's under 230, really 235. He likes big linebackers. Littleton is just under that, but I think he fits exactly what they need. But he's not the only one, because he might be the most costly of that group. Other names out there, Joe Schobert, Nick Kwiatkowski. Chicago, he's a guy that you particularly like. How much do you think that he's going to cost, a guy like Kwiatkowski?
And I think the other guy is Blake Martinez is another interesting one. Kwiatkowski's going to be interesting to kind of follow. I don't know what he's going to cost, but he would be kind of the guy I would go for first over everybody else, because I would let everybody else kind of get inundated with Schobert and obviously Littleton and those guys, and then look at, you know, getting somebody like Kwiatkowski or even Martinez at that point. Martinez is probably going to be a little more than Kwiatkowski, but they're going to be right around the same cost. I mean, they're about, I mean, virtually same age, same type of success in their careers.
Martinez is a tackle machine, though if you listen to Packers fans, coverage is not his strong suit.
And so that's going to be one of the things that people are going to have to understand is that it's hard to find cover linebackers, you know? And so a lot of it is scheme. And, you know, even when you draft guys like Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick to be the cover linebackers, it doesn't always work out. So, I mean, Littleton's obviously the best ideal fit because he kind of gives you that ability to run and chase, be kind of the free guy next to Jordan Hicks. I mean, Schobert's honestly a really good fit too, because Schobert's struggle is in the run game. And so if you get Schobert next to Hicks, where Hicks' strength is the run game, I think you have a nice yin and yang there. It's just, I mean, it's a tough group. There's going to be a ton of guys that are looking. So I just think you have to be very cognizant and careful. And then I think you continue to push forward to find the right fit. I think Kwiatkowski and Martinez and Schobert are the interesting names in this free agent class. Obviously, Littleton's ideal, but I think for me, it would go. It would start with Kwiatkowski, and then probably Schobert, and obviously Littleton would be kind of the highest rated guy. But as you said, at probably $12 to $13 million a year, I don't know if you can have $25 million invested in your inside linebackers.
Now, at the edge, on the edge side of the opposite of Chandler Jones, they want to add someone who's a pass rusher. You've got some names out there, but a lot of them are pricey, and a lot of them are going to get franchised. Dante Fowler's probably priced out. You're already paying. I mean, Chandler Jones is already going to count over $20 million against the cap. So you can't really get another guy that's going to cost that much. I think the highest end cost-wise you probably can go is someone like Marcus Golden. He's not going to command the $15 million a year, I don't think. And it would be a nice return. I actually wrote on Sunday, I think it was, a list of guys that are not quite the top tier. Marcus Golden's at the top in terms of price, and then there's some other guys. Kamalai Correa, Tennessee Titans. Kyle Vannoy, I think, would make a nice fit as well. Mario Addison, I don't know, would be a full-time guy, but still quite productive and played 3-4 for the first time last year and still was quite productive. And then what was the other name that I had on there? Kyler Fackrell, a guy I keep pounding the table for because of the local ties. I think he would make a nice fit. He had 10 sacks 2 years ago. He's never been much of a starter, so he wasn't a guy that started. But and Packers fans will say he's not super good in the run game. But if you end up keeping Hassan Reddick on the roster, I've said that I think if you go with the Hassan Reddick / Kyler Fackrell mix there at outside linebacker, that's a good blend. Fackrell only had the one really good year 2 years ago, had 10 sacks, and I think he's had 17 sacks total. 10 of them came 2 years ago. But the kid is from Mesa. He's from Mesa, would make a nice story, and there is some talent there.
Yeah, and another interesting guy in the Chandler Jones vein would be Matt Judon, and Yannick Ngakoue. Both are allegedly going to be franchise tagged by their collective teams, the Ravens for Judon and then Ngakoue for the Jaguars.
Barrett would have been great. The Cardinals should have signed him a year ago, but Vance Joseph apparently didn't like him well enough. He had him on his team.
I know. And so both those guys are going to get traded probably for second-round picks, a la Chandler Jones, Dee Ford. And so, you know, would you be interested in selling your second-round pick for that pass rusher? I think you hit on the main guys that kind of fit what they're looking for. You know, Ogba's an interesting one. Carl Nassib's not a bad name to look at. But I mean, if you're not going to pay the money, it's you know, slim pickings.
And on the defensive line, that's where you want to get one impactish player. If you re-sign a Rodney Gunter or Zach Kerr or both, that's nice. but you want a guy, you want to sign a guy that should have that can be what Darius Filon should have been. And there are some good, there are some good names out there. Obviously, Chris Jones is the biggest one. Obviously, he's going to get tagged and he's going to get a gazillion dollars. But there are some really, there are some really talented players out there that you could get. Derek Wolfe is a name that's been tossed around a lot. Michael Brockers was brought up by we've brought him up before. John Gambadora brought him up as well. You've got higher end players that you could go get, like a Shelby Harris or a DJ Reader or a Michael Pierce. So the defensive, the interior defensive line market is there. It'll be interesting to see how the money plays out, because you know, some guys, you know, Chris Jones is going to get paid. Is Shelby Harris, is Michael Pierce? And Michael Pierce is only 27 years old. Shelby Harris is 29, so he might not get the money that you think he might want to get. Michael Brockers is 29 years old. Who do you think would be out there? Now, Vernon Butler, he'd be nice. It's going to probably be costly.
Do you see what Jerron Reed is projected to get?
No, I didn't.
Almost $11 million a year.
Well, he did have that big year 2 years ago.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the thing that you're looking at. Just and I start off the show, you know, Zach Kerr and Rodney Gunter being key free agents that need to be brought back, and that's because we've looked at this as if Rodney Gunter and Zach Kerr are your two rotational guys, along with maybe a Zach Allen, and so that's your three rotational guys. And so if you can get two starters or you know, one starter, one rotational guy, and you have a six-man rotation of, you know, free agent Corey Peters, free agent Zach Allen, Rodney Gunter, and Zach Kerr, man, that's an improved defensive line right away. Obviously, you know, you talked about Chris Jones. There's even talk that might have to be a trade scenario as well. I don't think you're giving up the eighth pick for that to pay him $20 million a year. So then you go, okay, well, the next guy is probably either DJ Reader, who's more of a nose tackle type, or Javon Hargrave. Hargrave is going to command about $12 to $14 million a year. I mean, again, that's a ton of money. So 4 years, you know, $50 million, call it. It's going to be a lot of cake to be dishing out.
Is he Robinson, that much? Danny Shelton, yeah. You've mentioned a few times. Very solid interior player, not going to cost a lot because he isn't necessarily a three-down player, but he would fit. And it would, while Corey Peters has played nose, you don't need him to play nose. He can play across the line. You can move him over to one side or the other. If you bring in Danny Shelton and re-sign a Gunter or a Kerr, then you can have your starting lineup be Shelton, Gunter / Kerr, Allen or Peters, and Allen can contribute. And maybe, perhaps, their young guys from last year, like Michael Dogby and the other kid, I don't care.
Miles Brown.
Yeah, Miles Brown can take another step up and they'll become solid rotational guys.
Yeah, and so that's what you're looking at. I mean, that's the thing is, I don't think they're going to... I don't think they're going to splash. I think they're going to get some quality, quantity type guys. and so, you know, Derek Wolfe is going to be about $8 million. Danny Shelton, about $5 million. So if you got those two guys for $13 million instead of, you know, Javon Hargrave for $13 million, I don't know. I think I'm okay with that over the single player for $13 or $14 million. Not because I don't think Javon Hargrave is worth it. It's just that when you need two, I'm big on filling the two instead of just the one.
And scheme wise, it's not necessarily they need production from the line. They need to allow the linebackers to make plays. It'd be great if they can be disruptive and make plays on their own. But more than anything, they need them to be average to above average NFL players, as long as they got the talent behind them.
Correct.
Anybody else that you wish that they would get? If I had my wish list, I would go. I think I might say Schobert at inside backer, maybe Kyler Fackrell at outside backer. If I'm team building, or maybe I go with a camel like Correa. If I can get Kyle Vannoy, I think I do that. Might cost a little much. Littleton, or I go Schobert, Vannoy, Shelton, maybe Wolf, and then one of my returners defensively. And then after that, on the offensive side of the ball, I'm kind of content with what there is, and maybe bring back Kenyon Drake.
Right, and that's the thing that you're going to follow the rest of here is, can you bring back a key player? You know, maybe he's not key to us, but you know, we've heard that they like Kenyon Drake and they'd really like to have him back on the offense because they, especially Cliff and Kyler, they want to build on last year. They don't want to bring a bunch of disruption in. You know, that's why Sean Coogler's been kind of vocal about how much they like Justin Murray and you know, AQ Shipley, despite having guys or having the ability to pick a guy that can come in and replace or play in place of those guys. So, you know, I think when it's all said and done, the biggest thing is going to be finding a way to get three impact starters on defense. They don't have to be game changers. They just need to be impact starters that can give you, you know, those 60%+ reps, especially along the defensive line, and then allow Rodney Gunter and Zach Kerr to be part-time players, play the other 40% of the snaps, and play it at a high level like they're capable of doing and like they've shown they have. They just don't get, you know, they're just not guys that you can rely on for 75% of snaps. And so that's where it comes down to is like improving with the finite resources they have this season.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening. We will assume that we will be back in a week and a half, so we'll record normally it'll be the Tuesday night after the first weekend of free agency, assuming that it is still on schedule. Whatever it is, the next show that we have will probably come after the first wave of free agency, and then we'll go from there talking about the draft. On behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, go Cardinals. We'll be back again in a week and a half or so. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.